Good morning.
Morning.
Today is Father's Day, a Hallmark Day. We all come to this Buddha Dharma, this Buddha truth, this Buddha law, this Buddha teaching, with different reasons, with different motivations, with different approaches. And there are many, many different styles and reasons for making this approach. There are also many different doors through which to approach Buddha Dharma. Different and style, really, to be open for our different and differing characteristics. Rinzai Zen style is one specific stream of Dharma. It is not for everyone. It is not a style that is really suitable for many people. It is suitable for a small portion. At this time in history, at this time in our opening to Buddhism in the culture of the West, and to say that this is just American or the culture of the United States is not quite accurate. our social structures, our social constructs that we find prevalent in the society at this point in time are features that have been passed on for many, many generations and have grown out of specific traditions and events. So to say Western culture is not entirely accurate, because in many ways what we might refer to as Western culture is predominantly Eurocentric culture. And it's from the Eurocentric tradition, from the Abrahamic religious tradition, which served as the basis for the Eurocentric social tradition, that much of our present social order has its roots. And you've all heard me, or many of you have heard me, talk about the Columbus syndrome, the rewriting of history to appease our conscience, our societal conscience. And it's through this sort of thing, and its critical analysis, that we begin to get an idea of the depth of the difficulty in which we find ourselves at present, and also begin to appreciate the responsibility that we have, not only in approaching Buddha Dharma, but also in terms of relating to our society in the big picture perspective. 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. We heard a lot about Columbus in grammar school, and I'm sure kids still hear the same sort of thing, and how he discovered the supposed New World and brought civilization to the savages in the Americas. The reality of what happened, the in-depth critical history, involves the Spanish Inquisition and the pogroms held against the Jews in particular, and their expulsion from Spain, which produced the funding to fund Columbus's trip, his first trip to the New World. When the Jews were forced, exiled from Spain. They were forced to leave behind their valuables, which became property of the crown, which became property of Isabella and Ferdinand. So the first voyage of Columbus was done on the backs of the Jews. When Columbus landed, he landed on Hispaniola and immediately claimed the island in the name of the monarchy of Spain. Aside from the fact that there were many villages on the island and they were quite aware that the islands were inhabited, they proceeded to claim it anyway. There was nothing new about the so-called New World. The New World had been in existence for a long, long time with thousands upon thousands of generations of indigenous people living here. And judging by the writings of Columbus in his own diary, we begin to see that the social structure that the indigenous people had was one that was eminently more sane, compassionate, and socially responsible than what was brought here by Columbus and the Spanish. There were some 2 million Arawak indigenous people living on the island of Hispaniola when Columbus arrived. Fifty-two years later, there were 200 left. So here we had a supposedly civilized group of people subjugating a supposedly savage group of people. And it's interesting, Columbus describes the native people that he ran into as having no concept of property, having no concept of division of land, being gentle, generous, giving of everything they had, and never fighting or bearing arms. And through the materialistic greed and attitude of conquest that was brought by the Europeans, the culture of the Arawaks was systematically destroyed. People were tortured, people were killed, people were held in slavery. Supposedly for the greater good of God and King, King and God. The stories, the actual accounts of what happened at that time, if they're read really clearly, demonstrate that the supposed discovery of the New World was nothing but an exercise in brutal conquest and oppression. And this is the foundation of our social system. Our entire social structure is based on getting over, power over dynamics of ruling and dominating one another. And it permeates everything that we find ourselves dealing with in life, even today. Had Columbus not landed, the indigenous population might not have produced, in fact, definitely would not have produced the type of society that we find ourselves in today. We certainly would not be worrying about the ecological balance of the planet. The agricultural practices and social practices of the indigenous people of the Americas were such that they lived in sustainable harmony with the environment. Not just small groups of people, but millions of people. The conquest of the Americas involved the slaughter of over 25 million human beings, starting with the Spanish conquistadors. We hear about these men in history, conquistadors, people who conquered, people who came from a foreign land and put native people to the sword, to conquer them, to steal from them, to take from them, to possess them, to own them, and then discard them as so much useless garbage. And this is distasteful. This is not a proud history at all. But this is the truth. And until we look at the truth, and until we examine our history critically, we cannot hope to develop an understanding of our present situation. But what does this have to do with Buddha Dharma? Well, it has a lot to do with Buddha Dharma, because we are products of this society. And in order for us to clearly and in a totally open manner embrace Buddha Dharma, we have to have an understanding of our present position. We have to have some understanding of who we have been conditioned to think we are. It gives us some insight into the functioning of our mind. I had a conversation with a Roshi about a week ago, and we were discussing this issue, and the Roshi said, well, you know, Buddha was only a product of his society at the time, and we are only products of our society at the time, and we can go no further than that. And I said, absolutely, I disagree with that. Because it's through awakening that we can penetrate through these social structures and the conditioning that we are faced with. We don't have to be a product of any of this. We can simply see it clearly, but it does take effort to see it. It does take education. It does take critical thinking. It's not just a matter of discarding all of these things, throwing them away because only the Buddha Dharma has the answers, and only through looking within can we see the truth. That's only partially true. Yes, the truth is indeed within. However, within and without are really interchangeable. Big picture, broadband awakening, and I've talked about this before, of seeing not only deep enough for personal kensho, but also seeing social structures, seeing conditions within our communities, within our societies, within our families, our interrelationships, seeing big picture and small picture simultaneously. But deeply, deeply investigating these issues, very, very important. Very, very important. And still doing the Zazen and sort of having this happening simultaneously in order to fully integrate, to fully awaken, to have this happen on the personal level, on the kensho level, on the direct experience level, the grasping of the anatta principle, which is really the sort of the antidote to the Abrahamic approach of separation. We look at the Abrahamic traditions and we find we have God and we have man and the two are separate. We have man and his environment and the two are separate. There's a separation. Within the anatta principle, that principle of no self, that principle of emptiness, there is no separation. It's not about separation at all. It's not about individuality because there is no individuality. So it's an entirely different paradigm of existence. Paradigm of existence. And it goes beyond simply awakening personally. It goes beyond simply the kensho experience of personal awakening. It permeates into our psychology, our sociology, our economics, our ecology. All of these are formed and have at their core this fundamental paradigm. And whether we take a dualistic paradigm or a non-dualistic paradigm, this influences all of these aspects within which we find ourselves functioning. And to a greater or lesser extent, every single one of us is dealing with these issues on a regular basis. For many of us, the only time that we are around a group of people who come close to sharing a paradigm is when we're here in the Zendo doing Zazen and doing our practice, being alone together. The rest of the time, we're out there in the streets, and it's a very, very different paradigm. So I have perhaps said too much. Are there any questions or commentary?
Can we point to a society where the fruits of the Buddhist paradigm have
No, I can't.
Except perhaps indigenous Native Americans who do not live in Paradigm. What drove them, what took place in their mentality that apparently produced a society which in the ways you indicated was far superior to the European mentality, and perhaps if we can we duplicate it, can we articulate it in any meaningful way and apply it to feel our society?
I think that you know we're dealing with fundamental underlying damage, and that damage is really the damage that comes out of the first noble truth. Life is suffering, and there is, you know, there's suffering and damage no matter what, no matter where we look. That's all pervasive. So I don't think necessarily that the indigenous nations that existed in the American continent were perfect by no means. However, they were very, very different and dissimilar from the conquest dynamics that were brought here from Europe. And the conquest dynamics were what predominated over the indigenous ways. And those conquest dynamics are what are part of our social structure right now, today. You know, you hear it's a dog-eat-dog world. Everybody's out there trying to get over on everybody else. I mean, that's all we're doing out there. You know, I mean, you just look around at the level of aggression that we're dealing with in the environment and in our society. I mean, people are being trained in the school systems to be part of this entire, you know, charade. And it's not a way to happiness. I don't think necessarily that there are really any societies that we can point to that are perfectly idyllic. No. And I certainly don't think that the societies that Buddhism came up through are particularly idyllic either. I don't think that the Tibetan society was that great. Certainly it wasn't great for the peasants who were essentially held in serfdom and owned by the monasteries. I don't think they had a great life. You know, here, take a prayer wheel and some trinkets and beads and go off and do your thing and, you know, make sure you get the crops in on time. You know, I mean, if that's what we're talking about, yuck. I mean, it's great for the guys that are running the monastery and stuff, but for the people that are out in the fields producing the crops, all they get is beads and trinkets. What good does that do? So we've got to be, you know, we've got to be very, 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 very suspicious and very careful and very, open at what we're looking at. But we don't have the answers. I mean, and that's a very important point, is to know that we don't have the answers, but that we really need to question. We really need to look. Did everybody you bought the book, right? Did you like it?
Yes.
We have more books for sale for people who didn't have the opportunity to buy a book. We got the book Addicted to War. EZF was part of the production of this volume, and it's an updated version of a comic book. So we are we're selling them for what, $6? They retail for $8, but we're selling them for $6, and we're urging people to pick up copies and get copies for their friends because it helps support EZF. Of course, we haven't even broken even on them yet, but we're getting there. In any event, we only have 5 minutes left. I hope I answered your question. And if I left a question in your mind, good.
Thought-provoking. Yeah.
Good. Good, yeah, you see, that's excellent. You know, I mean, these are real life koans. This is real koan practice when we're dealing with reality and not, you know, not some, you know, abstract little nuance that happened, you know, in ninth century China. You know, we got a major koan on our plates right in front of us, and that's the fucking planet. It's going down the tubes. Really. And we need to really open ourselves up to that. And now we need to clean up and have coffee, so we'll end informally. And thank you all for coming. Oh, the 19th, Wednesday, right? Nyack Zen. I'll be speaking up there. There's a sangha up there. And please, you know, everybody, take part. If you haven't given your name and email and everything to Jim, please do so. So we'll get you on the mailing list. Did I cover everything? Anything else?
Happy Father's Day there. I love you. I didn't tell you that.
Thank you.
Do you have this information you said on your website?
I'm sorry?
Can I visit your website and see information about Nyack on your website?
No. Yeah, we can do that.
And directions?
Yeah, maybe tie it into MapQuest or something, or Yahoo, or whatever. Yeah, we'll get all that out to you. But you have to make sure Jim has your email. All right, we're all set.